to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Bell of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the wonderful world of Nerdum.
And Red Powell.
What's up?
Guys, hey, first let me apologize for last week. So, not to tell folks how the sausage is made or whatever, but I got a new headset. And then I have been previously running without the software for the headset, and then I got the software for the headset and apparently messed up my audio. And it didn't sound bad in the edit. It sounded like not amazing, but it was still fine. Because I wouldn't put anything out that I didn't think was great. But then apparently after it went out to the aggregators and stuff, there, I think like a copy of a copy type thing, just, I apologize for anyone that was impacted, but thanks for the folks that pointed it out constructively.
Bless them.
Hopefully this is better this time, and I'll make it right. I don't know. But once you publish it, and then it basically just takes on a life of its own and there's no getting it back. So.
Yeah, the dream is dead by then.
Yeah, we're back to it. But we got lots of stuff to talk about. In this episode, I'm going to insert a segment. I'm going to try to do something with the Lorehammer guys, talking about, basically what they're looking forward to in 9th. And as we continue this kind of lead up to Warhammer 40,000 9th edition. And they, have a much different perspective on the game and what they like about the game. The subject of their podcast. Than we talk about here. So it's going to be cool to try to blend those two things together, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I love those guys.
So let's talk about these bikes, man. The Outriders.
So yeah, I'm liking that G-Dub's kind of going back to 30K with this. Like there is this strong link to Primaris Marines and like their 30K Legion, the Legions of Old. I don't know if many people are aware, but when you see an Intercessor, and it's a really it's kind of a one purpose unit. Like they've only got the same gun, they've all got the same loadout and the same kind of purpose. That was really what the 30K Legions were like. They were very specialized in what they did, the Primaris range really harkens back to that. Things like Hellblasters, like there's three choices of gun, but they all have to take the same gun.
The Melted Weapon Squad, same thing. Like you can't, a tactical unit in the Heresy, you can't just sprinkle in a Melted Gun into a unit.
Nah, it's all bolters, and then maybe you get to take a combi or a power sword or whatever you like on your sergeant, but that's about it. Now, I do like their harkening back to that. It's a bit of the OG-ness in the Primaris range, and these Outriders. Well, the bikers in 30K are called Outriders. Like the bikes with wheels in 30K are called Outriders.
Yep.
So I really like that they're keeping their roots going, and it's got this nice edge to it that tickles my nostalgia buttons.
Yeah, I think the bikes are getting a slight bit of grief because of their low rider stance. But come on. I mean, I think that we can assume that though that suspension is probably built to lift the whole chassis up and down as necessary, but we also can suspend a little disbelief because the model looks so cool.
I like him a lot, actually. I might be a little different on the quad bike thing, and maybe we'll get to that in later, but I'm actually a fan of the Outrider bikes. I think they're actually pretty sick.
I do love the ATV too, but I'll get to the reason why. So in the when they were doing the preview this past weekend, and I know this has been mentioned before, but the sculptor designer guy mentioned that everything in the Space Marine profile looks like a fist.
Huh.
Like a rhino it looks like four fingers, four knuckles. And that's kind of the same way that all their stuff looks like. Even the Storm Raven looks like it the only reason it flies is by sheer force of will, by its two hearts and black carapace and Suzanne. Basically it shouldn't fly, but because it's a giant fist being thrown through the air.
That is a very good way of thinking about it. I've never heard of that before. Red, is that something you partake in?
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. I kind of appreciate the aesthetic in that regard. I mean, the fist concept, because it's very, it's very aggressive, but in a lot of ways also, the blockiness, something that if you look at a lot of sci-fi aesthetics and whatnot, does something that goes into space necessarily need to be aerodynamic, right? legitimately, if it needs to be on, if it's going to be in a zero G environment or a limited G environment, like the moon or something, does it have to be aerodynamic? Does it have to be all, swoopy like the Eldar stuff? Can it not just be a brick? You see that movie Aliens or Alien, the spaceships are just big bricks in space. It's not
Just a bunch of amalgamation of the most practical shapes chucked together.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm with it. I'm totally with it.
I think if the Storm Raven looks ridiculous to fly, I think the Space Wolf, like, what is it, the Storm Wolf? That's where the real stuff is. It's a shoe.
Flying brick. Yeah.
It's a shoe. Yeah.
But see, you know, again, I don't mind that stuff. But when you start to think about, I mean, I guess we can kind of conceptualize. Yes, these are all very aggressive looking because they are, you know, all a bunch of flying fists, and the bikes are no different. And we were talking a little bit about in the pre-show. We don't know anything about their shooting profile.
They've obviously got like a twin bolter weapon in the front. There's no doubt about that. But the sergeant's also got a bolter in his hand. It's too big to be a bolt pistol. But it doesn't look quite the same size as the bolters in the front of the cab, like in the front of the chassis. So does that mean these guys maybe have heavy bolters in the front, or like a Primaris equivalent of a heavy bolter?
Well, what do you think? You think they may have the same profile as what are the Inceptors?
That was actually about to be my assumption. What if they've got twin Inceptor assault bolters in the front? They're like strength 5 assault heavy bolters, essentially.
The
assault bolters are 3 shots each. I wouldn't. You, if there's a twin one in the front, that's 6 strength 5 shots. Like that's pretty hefty.
They look like they're strength 5 to me.
They do look. They look really big. They actually look like heavy bolters. They do look heavy bolter size.
Yeah, but I'm willing to bet they're going to have that similar profile. And then we got dude with the chainsword. Now, look, I don't know if what they've shown us is just, you know, one guy has a chainsword, if they can all take chainswords.
Well, I think there's two dudes. There's two dudes with chainswords, and the sergeant has got a bolter.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, we've seen their stat profile now as far as like the line move 14. Moving to 14 is pretty big, but with 2 base attacks, another one for a chainsword, another one for shock assault. You know, we're looking at just an easy casual 4 attacks apiece with no other buffs.
Yeah. Plus 1 on the sarge, so just 3 guys on the charge. You got 13 attacks. That's nothing casual to stick your nose up at. Casual 13 attacks, from 3 dudes.
Casual 13 attacks.
And this is, I mean, we don't know the points, right? I mean, that's, you know, it's easy for us to gush about this kind of stuff and in a void of not knowing what the points are. But I think at the very base level, that many wounds, that many attacks, that much movement, and then looking as cool as they are, I mean, the bikes fit into a lot of things. I mean, I'm already thinking these are going to look amazing red, right? With that many attacks, with a plus 1 to wound, and all that shot, all that DACA, why wouldn't
Is that how you go through life, Paul? You just look at things and be like, that look good in red. Like,
yeah.
Buying a new car, does it look good in red? Talking to the salesman.
Can I put a BA symbol on this?
Yeah. If it had a gold mask on it, would it add or detract?
That's a good question.
How could it not add, right?
Yeah. These are begging for some death masks. And I saw a gold Maserati the other day.
And you're like, Sanguinius would drive that.
I was like, you know, put some abs on the hood or whatever.
Put some abs on the hood. do they have nipples? Is that nipples on your car? And you're like, yes.
Then you have Dante to go into this whole explanation of why, and you just hope that they get it. You hope that they let you get that far in your explanation.
Yeah, before they run. So here's an interesting thing about what you're saying about the movement and where these things might play a part in how people are already starting to conceptualize the next edition. With a smaller board, does having longer movement just make you better?
I think it does, man. I mean, imagine this. There's a multitude of things we don't know, but if charges still stay 2d6, and I don't see that changing, right? But you know, move 14, you charge 2d6, you're moving, what is that? I don't know, 60% of the board?
21. Yeah, it's 21 inches on an average, so 7 on the 2d6. And if we're losing, a board now is 72 inches of the 6 foot, and they're saying we're going to lose about a foot of that. So yeah, that's an easy third of the board you're pretty much covering.
Yeah, and then you have to imagine that these guys will be able to be targeted by strats that...
Well, just straight off the bat, I'm conceptualizing them as Raven Wing. If they get the Raven Wing keyword, which I hope they do, because that would be sick, they would get a lot of ways to double move and advance and pregame move and all sorts of things. So yeah, I think there's a lot to be excited about. I would love to see a White Skies army that actually has bikes in it again. That would be fun, G-Dub, if you're listening. I'm tired of these Centurion-based White Skies armies.
Well, so that's the thing, right? Is like, so, and I think before we get to the Outriders versus Centurions thing, which I think I'm starting to see a lot of, you know, we don't know yet if this is going to be a 3-model unit or it's going to be a 3-to-9-model unit, right? So we saw Shadow Spear, a lot of 3-model units that couldn't expand after that, you know, like the Eliminators and the suppressors.
That's a great point.
But aggressors and whatnot, you know, they go up to 9 models. Are these going to be able to go up to 9? That's a question, right?
Absolutely right. And that will be a big limiting factor if they do remain at 3. And that will kind of maybe hedge them into the role of just being kind of skirmishes. Like you send them out to...
Of being Outriders.
Yep. Being exactly right. Outriders. There you go. But it is such a limiting factor for things like suppressors. I mean, the amount of buffs you could that would get so much more mileage on suppressors on a 6-man rather than a 3-man. It kind of legitimately holds them back. I mean, the only time you saw them was when you were able to completely overpower them with Iron Hands. I haven't seen them again since the Iron Hands changes. So they had their little heyday. And mind you, Eliminators are still good though. Eliminators are still good.
Yeah, Eliminators I think are even going to be stronger with improved terrain, right? I mean, with obscurity.
Oh yeah, very true. Yeah.
You'll see. I mean, they're good now, right? They're very useful now. But I think we'll see probably even more people trying to squeeze them into list than we're doing it before.
Well, and if a lot of people with mono, well, people want to be take a lot of encouragement to take mono faction firstly, and then a lot of even more encouragement to take mono detachment. And if people are taking your brigade as Space Marines, they're the cheapest, most sense making heavy supports choice I can think of, apart from Thunderfires.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and they are just so efficient for their points.
I love them. I swear by them.
Having the various anything that gives you multiple options, like you can choose on the fly with how you're going to behave with it.
Well, that was one of the first Adam's ring a ding, bing sweeping statements. One of the first ones I made for 8th edition was that anything that has any weapon that has a dual profile is automatically assumed by me to be good until proven bad, rather than the other way around.
that's fair. That's very fair.
And I mean, that held true a lot with what we saw when the edition started, with things like Dark Reapers being so prevalent. They had a dual profile, and all of a sudden, did you need to waste those Terminators? You had the Terminator profile. Did you need to waste Knights? You had the Knight Killing profile. And yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, those are some really good points in regards of just the Outriders themselves. But then you take it into, so, you know, you mentioned the White Scars and Centurion builds. Like, are Outriders a viable replacement to Centurions?
If they can go up in like multiple models, for sure. I think you're going to have a hard time overcoming the strength of the attacks for the Centurions.
Mm-hmm. Strength 10.
But if you can make up for it in quantity of attacks, like if this is a 9-man unit with, let's say, you're able to get him to 5-6 attacks apiece, that's a different equation with a 14.
And the sergeant say he could have a Thunderhammer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that changes.
I know, and it's almost wishlisting at that point, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I would not expect the sergeant to be able to have a Thunderhammer, but I don't know. I mean, does a Thunderhammer come on the many of the Primaris upgrade sprues?
For sergeants, for intercessor squads, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it at the moment. Like, you can't take them on incursors or infiltrators or anything else. It's literally just like intercessors can take a Thunderhammer now. I mean, not that you'd really want to take one on things like aggressors anyway, but yeah, that's the kind of the limitations. Mind you, I still think that could be a possibility, because when you think about it, like, it doesn't make sense that a scout sergeant would have a Thunderhammer, does it? Hey. At least in my little world. At least in my little world.
He just
world,
clicks it on right at the last second, you know, right before you.
Oh yeah, that's available? I'll take that.
He's walking through the armory and he's like, why did they leave the Thunderhammers behind? Well, I'm taking that one today.
Well, scout sergeants, I mean, they're not necessarily juniors anymore.
That's true.
Yeah, these Outrider guys aren't really scouts.
Can we talk about the Crusader boys for a second?
So the best thing to come out of this so far is the memes from the Primaris.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which, by the way, the 3 helmets that you can use, like that one with the visor up,
is sick.
Good.
It's sick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know there's a bunch of people that there's a very firm camp of people that you always go into battle with your helmet. And then there's the bald and screaming camp, you know, And here we have, we might be able to find common ground with Visor Up.
So when I first saw it, I wanted to do it as a chaplain. I want to put a chaplain mask on the helmet looking up, and I want to pose him like he's incredulous, or his intelligence has just been insulted. Like he's talking to his like a co-commander, and he has to look at the level of stupid in the eye of the guy who's just said, like, I don't know. I just need to see if you look as stupid as you sound or something.
The designer commentary about how they've added their 27 pieces of flair or whatever, I think is awesome. Yep. I think that it visually advances the story where, you know, it's easy for us to say that, I think, but what we do want is, you know, when we're putting our models on the table, we want them to be the heroes of 1,000 campaigns or, you know, whatever. And one way of doing it is how we know Space Marines have done it for the 40 years we've been playing with them is all these little purity seals and trinkets and doodads. And yeah, I love the crest, you know, whatever that's called on his shoulder there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, and that's, there's something to the veteran status, right? So like if you took, I know we're going, you know, talking old Marines in contrast, but if you took like an old Space Marine model from before where it had like one or two purity seals, and then you looked at those new Stern Guard kits that they came out with, I mean, I really feel like we're seeing that with this translation into Primaris from what an Intercessor has to what these knights effectively have. I mean, they are decked
Blade
out.
Guard veterans.
Yeah, Blade Guard veterans are definitely elite.
Yeah, how do they get there though? See, I mean, I guess the answer is Impulsors, which huge fan.
So in the designer commentary, they said this is almost news to me, but they said the Indominus Crusade has been going for some like 200 years or something now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, these are probably the lads who, you know, they were first press calls, call first press brood Indominus Marines.
I just love that they've got these big pistols. You know, it's like the unit is going to have a function in any stage of the game, which the idea of that sounds cool. Sorry, Red, I jumped in.
No. So I was going to say, in regards to lore, I mean, that was something that kind of caught me off guard a little bit in the rule book when 8th edition dropped, is that, so like we saw, you know, what happened at the end of 7th edition with the Gathering Storm and everything like that, you know, the awakening of Gilliman.
My beloved Cadia.
Yeah, our beloved Cadia, right. Always in our hearts. But the rule book of 8th edition actually, like it said exactly that, like it jumped 200 years ahead of time. And so like, yeah, the Indominus Crusade. And so that's what, you know, it's really cool about some of the announcements that they made in regards to the lore and the writing, is that the Horus Heresy writers with the Siege of Terra kind of already mapped out, and the writers working hard on that. They're looking at writing kind of what goes on in those 200 years now. And that's going to be really interesting to see. But I mean, that's definitely where, I mean, I think you're 100% right, Adam, in that this is where those veterans of Primaris come from, because they've already been at work for two centuries at this point.
Yeah, and they've had enough time to grow specializations and grow attributes and things that they're better at than others, which is, I think, where the range, you know, it's kind of obvious the range had very little character to it when it was first launched. I mean, we had, what, four different units and then 30 Primaris lieutenants, but
because there's a lot of characters in this box.
I'm looking at the Necron thing that they've leaked for the Indominus box set. I'm like, man, they're gonna have like 30 different.
Oh, we're gonna talk about Necrons in a second. I mean, I feel like I was doing this reflection as I was, you know, what are we gonna talk about tonight? I was like, well, I feel like that we've spent a good year almost making fun of the fact that there are like seven total Necron differences. Five different Necron kits.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's going to be 15.
I think I'm on record as saying they're the equal. I think they're the least or equal least amount of models in their range, like sculpts, unique sculpts in their range. So I just think, and there isn't a single. So as many memes as I can make about Primaris Marines, I have to like forget a meme about Necrons now, because they look so freaking good.
Jokes on us, Necrons. just trying to wake up. It just took them a little while.
It just took them a decade. Two decades.
And that's where the cool thing, I mean, so like, you know, without going too far into it, because we haven't really like opened up on the Necron topic, but like lore wise, right? Like, you know, the veterans of the Primaris army, they had to develop over the last 200 years because they didn't exist before that. All my new stuff for the Necron army, I can just say, well, I woke up this tomb world you didn't know about that had all this stuff just waiting to pop out. So, you know, surprise on you.
Yeah, we didn't think we needed this stuff before.
Yeah. Cracked open the wrong grave. That's God, man. All right. Well, actually, let's take a break. We'll come back with that that community spotlight segment, and then we'll jump back in. We'll talk about some Necron stuff.
Cool.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a community spotlight segment on Forge and Narrative. My name is Paul. I'm joined today by Mark and Eric from Lorehammer.
Hey Paul, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us on the podcast, Paul.
Guys, thank you all very much for joining me. You know, look, Necrons feel like they've been asleep for a long time. I thought, who better to have on to talk about the tomb vaults busting wide open than guys that actually know what they're talking about?
Well, don't give us too much credit. Yeah. Now you've just set the bar so high, we're not going
to
meet it.
I'd like to start over, guys. They kind of know what they're talking about.
There you go.
We're probably right 6 out of 10 times and wrong 7 out of the other 10 times. So,
and we can live with that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining me. You guys obviously have a great podcast. Produce a lot of content. Happy to have you on. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah. We've been doing Lorehammer for like almost 3 years now, maybe a little over. So we're getting up to that 100 episode mark pretty quick here. So there's a lot of content out there.
Yeah, I don't know how you celebrated your 100 episode release, but hopefully we've got something big planned. And I don't know. It's kind of crazy to see those three, you know, digits like scroll across the screen for your episodes.
It really is. So, you know, we're up to, if you count the bonus episodes, we've got quite a back catalog as well. But this is it's a labor of love, right? Like you're putting a lot of effort, a lot of time into it. An hour of audio is not... It doesn't take an hour to produce.
No, not at all.
A lot more complicated than that. And, you know, anybody who is doing it for any extended period of time, I got mad respect. So hopefully folks are able to check you out.
Yeah, I've been nothing but like overwhelmed with the positive responses of like the Warhammer community and stuff. It's really like quite a wild community. Some communities, you know, you go to Star Wars, it can be super toxic, but like...
Is that how you feel?
Yeah, every time I talk to Christian, he's always rambling about it. But that's
singular anecdote.
That's all I got. But yeah, like I've been blown away by just how positive like people are responding to podcasts and stuff, whether it's ours or podcasts like yours or just whatever. It's been good.
It's a fun time. I mean, I love interacting with people from all over the world. That's kind of one of the main driving factors. So,
yeah, exactly.
That's it. So yeah, testament to you guys' staying power and stuff. So yeah, if you don't mind, let us know or tell me what you're excited about 9th. Anything you are looking forward to, or is there, you know, anything that's jumped out at you that's just really got you waiting with bated breath?
Well, for me as a Necron player, like it's obviously really exciting to see Necron take like the big bad guy role of 9th.
And you're making so many new friends that are like, hey, you want to split a Primaris box with me? You know, that's always that's nice.
Yeah, as the single Necron player in our group of friends, it's kind of feels like a little bit like I'm the king right now. So everybody wants to be my friend.
You're going
to
get all the warriors.
I already have too many. And now I think I'm already in for 4 halves of the box. And like we haven't even purchased any yet. So we'll see.
That's good. We'll see.
Man, we talk about on this episode, we're going to release this. We talk about how cool the models are. And actually, for like almost like the last year or so, we've kind of been given the Necron range some grief because, it only had 4 or 5 kits or whatever. But that is getting a massive overhaul.
Yeah, it's easily doubling in size, just a number of boxes that you're going to be able to buy. It's so cool.
I can't even remember the last time they did this big of a release for a faction that wasn't Primaris.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had to have been the Dark Eldar, Drakari, I think.
Yeah, like it's been a while for sure. Or maybe Genseer Cults, but yeah.
And sisters, wow, we've got a lot of new models.
Oh, life is good. Okay. Oh, okay.
Never mind.
But still, we just replayed an exact conversation that I had with some other friends. But that's how I think amazing the Necron line is. That we've been hit with rapid fire punches from this model range already, and it's made us forget about some of this other stuff.
It's so good. Yeah. It's such a good line.
Yeah. It's I'm super excited for it. Everything I've seen so far has been pretty on brand with how I feel like they're going to take Necron into like a more horror aspect. And yeah, that seems to fit really well.
Yeah. It's nice that they're kind of leaning away from just space Egyptian skeleton warriors, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of leaning into that more horror.
Yes, it's been interesting to see, you know, the original sketches and just how, I mean, you know, we can look back now and just know that model making technology couldn't catch up to those original sketches. And now we're there plus plus.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. Like the amount of detail they pack into those models now, it's a lot to paint.
Yeah. Well, a big thing we know we're going to see is the Silent King. You know, what does that mean to Necron players?
I mean, it's effectively like, I don't know, I don't want to go too crazy here, but
go
it's
crazy.
Like if the Emperor decided to really come back and just lead the Imperium.
Ah.
Right? Like,
you think he's that good? That's nice.
Well, I don't think
he's... such a cute little boy in your thought process.
I don't think he's that good, but I think it's the equivalency in terms of authority and power, in terms of, you know, their ability to rule their race. And it is, you can't get bigger than the Silent King for Necron. And I think that's a crazy thing, is we'll get to learn so much about this mystical figure who pretty much determined the entire fate of a race.
Yeah.
So,
but one thing really cool about the Silent King too is he isn't respected by every Necron. So it's not like he shows up and now the whole Necron race is going to be united, you know, below him or anything.
Yeah.
So where, you know, if the Emperor came back, that would definitely happen. So
anyone who would immediately be declared traitor.
Oh, and
right?
Killed,
so.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, there's a really cool line in one of the codexes. Imhotep, who was previously the most, like, respected and prominent Necron figure, he was the Pharaon of the Sotek dynasty. And there's a line where he says that the Silent King's time has come and gone, and that it's best if he were to never reappear ever, because Imhotep would fight him and would challenge his authority. And I think that really, it sets up this whole, you know, dynamic of the fact that the Silent King is supposed to be the herald of this Necron, but truthfully, like, it's a shattered and fractured race, and they all have their own goals while still trying to hold on to what they are as Necron and following their dynastic codes and stuff. So I'm really excited to see the dynamic.
Yeah, you mentioned a good point about if you know, the Emperor were to return. I don't know that all the quote unquote loyal Primarchs would still want to follow him.
Yeah, it could be hit and miss for some of them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I don't want to derail the conversation, but I'd say it's interesting to think that because I would never know that intrigue also existed in the Necron world.
Yeah, it's very much like that. So now anyone who's written Necron lore for themselves, that's the big question they have to ask themselves.
Sure, yeah. Do they align with the Silent King, or do they choose to go their own route and go against him?
Yeah.
You know, if you're not for me, you're against me. And I love that aspect of he's going to try and bring everything together, and there will just be those who flat out say, like, no, this is all your fault. You know, you're the problem. Get out. And I'm excited.
What role did the Silent King have in, like, bringing down the Star Gods or the Eldar race? I mean, that's one of the things the cool things that we can now look at the range and say, yeah, these guys may have brought down a civilization or two.
So the one big thing about the Silent King is it is a title, but now it is a character. So the Silent King has existed during, like, the War in Heaven, and there was
many Wars of Secession.
Yeah, and there was many different Silent Kings. Then they died out, but now there's only one. So when you're reading old Necron lore, you got to keep that in mind, that the one that did this action over here might not be the one that actually came back to the galaxy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Interesting.
To make.
Okay. Do they have or at least you're aware of, like, a line of succession? Is this one where it's just different life force going into different robot bodies, or, I mean, how does it work? Any ideas?
Well, that it became a person when the biotransference all happened. So before, when they were still flesh and blood, the Silent King was a role that was passed from dynasty to dynasty to make sure that no dynasty held power within the Necron Tyr race for too long. And then once biotransference happened, everyone is kind of frozen in time. And he has been the Silent King since that moment. But before then, it could have been any number of different Necron Tyr making decisions as the Silent King.
Yeah. Sure. But the very big thing, like, that the Silent King, as we know him, contributed to Necron lore is the whole biotransference and also the destruction of the, what do they call them, command codes?
Yeah, the command codes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the command codes were the codes that he used to be able to control the entire Necron race as a whole. So he could literally override everyone. He destroyed them and then left the galaxy, giving Necron the ability to function for themselves again, for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, Necron warriors are still Necron warriors, but
correct. Was that the impetus when they got the dynasty rules in the first place? Like, when they started to develop personalities and were just the mindless robots?
So the dynasties themselves existed way before the whole biotransference thing.
Well, when publication wise, like when the Necrons went from being, they were just kind of this, silent destruction force wave of metal going across like Terminator 2 on the battlefield. And then we got these dynasty rules in the end of fifth or whatever.
Yeah. So
you're talking from like third edition to fifth edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So those two lores, actually, they don't work together. They are like the old Necron lore was retconned.
Yeah, so it was pretty strongly. There's a couple things that they added in the new ones that just didn't fit in the old ones. So it was much more of an effective retcon and changing of the lore as it was to adding to the lore.
Yeah, it's not it's not like the Silent King destroyed the command codes and then that bumped them into them being coming up with their dynasties or something. So
I get you. And I thought it might have just, quote unquote, reawakened it or something. But I'm coming from a complete outsider. Like, I'll be honest. It's like the range, I think, has been cool. And I like the idea of them, but they've never really captured my imagination. So I haven't dug too deep. And also, like, their main enemies have been Ultramarines. And everybody knows Ultramarines are not as cool as Blood Angels, so.
And that's a fact. That's just straight up. That's how it is.
But then when the Necrons allied with the Blood Angels, and I was like, I can't be down with this. I have to block this out of my mind.
So I love talking about that part. So have you read that, like, that small, it's a tiny little section where Dante actually meets the Silent King on Baal. And it's kind of the idea that these Necron have allied themselves with the Blood Angels, and it never really sat correctly with me. So I went and found that passage in the book, and I made sure I read it. And the conclusion I've come to is that there was no alliance at all, in that the Necron used the Blood Angels as like a break for the Tyranids there, and that they maneuver the Blood Angels to positions where they would overextend themselves and cause massive casualties among both ranks, while the Necron were able to preserve themselves. And I think that's, it fits way more with how I have viewed how Necron act to what they consider lesser races.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we need to expunge this from the records. I'm going to put the official inquisitorial stamp on that. We can move on. Because the silent, look, we've only seen little glimpses of what the model could be. I mean, are you?
Yeah.
Like, can you even wait to get your hands on it?
I can't. Like, I'm so excited to sit down there and pore over every single millimeter of that model.
And then just not paint any of it. It's going to be great naturally for all your opponents to see that happen. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I'm a firm believer in the Adeptus Plasticus.
Mm-hmm.
Just plastic models on the table. Hey,
we can all experience this hobby in a multitude of ways.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm... Everything about that picture they released, that super grainy one, and then they released another one that got better. Just, you're zooming in as far as possible to try and make out every little detail of the model. And I'm so excited. I can't even begin to express it.
Have any of these, like a Plasmancer or whatever, ever been mentioned before, even in a story?
Story, I'm not entirely certain of, but there are listed disciplines of different cryptics. Plasmancer is one of them, Ethermancer, Chronomancer, and I believe they're listed in the fifth edition codex. But even the fifth edition codex, like there was no such thing as an actual, you know, Plasmancer on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And we've shared before, Mark and I have, about how we think it was a really big missed opportunity from Games Workshop to not create different disciples of this. So, there's one called like a psychomancer, and they're masters of, like influencing organic minds or psychological stuff. And they like mess with their opponent's minds and cause them to go insane and stuff. So
that's so cool.
It's going to be really cool to see them introduce that aspect onto tabletop and effectively give Necron what I'm hoping for is their own version of a psyker without it being a psyker.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, instead of using actual psychic powers, it's just through the power of science.
Yeah, that's exactly.
We theorize a little bit about that in the next segment. Which by all means, please let me know what your thoughts about it. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
But we believe that's kind of the way it looks to us too.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that one for me.
Yeah, and they can just keep pumping out these new different types of techno sorcery.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of in a way what the Satan powers are, I would imagine. I mean, they're not out there pulling levers and pressing buttons or whatever. They're just shooting laser beams and stuff.
That's a really cool part of Necron 2 is this, the Catan powers and the fact that they can reshape reality without touching any sort of immaterium or warp powers or sorcery. And it's such an unexplained and unknown aspect of who they are.
And it's like a naturally occurring thing for them too, because they could do all this stuff before they even had their metal bodies even.
Sure. Yeah. They were just able to transmute matter and affect things using purely their understanding of the real and natural universe.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see also what way they take the Catan and whether or not they create truly monsters out of them or if they're going to be more like the Pokeball type things that they are now.
Has there been any more information on like that, what we assume is a new Satan model? Have they talked about it, shown any
not
pictures?
Not a peep. Not,
not a peep.
Nothing.
Okay, just the grainy photos that I can look at before I go to bed. That's nice. Okay.
Yep, that's it. Okay, so I know we don't have a ton of time left, but what are your thoughts? Now I'm coming. Look, we're just talking shop here, right? And I'm coming out of left field with some of these things. So sorry to catch you flat footed if I do. But what are your thoughts?
Well, we're ready. We're professionals.
Yeah.
The dragon in Mars, is it a dragon? Is it a Necron? You know, what's the relationship?
Sure. Yeah, Mark.
I like to think that it's not. I like to think that there's still powerful forces out there that we don't know anything about. I don't really like 40K when they tie every string together and everything eventually makes a reoccurrence or a reappearance somewhere. So I personally don't think it is. I don't like to think that it is. But hey, who cares what I think?
Yeah, there's I think there's like a one-off line about some Necron trying to land on Mars. And a lot of people have really latched onto that and say, okay, that must mean the Void Dragon in Mars is a shard of the Catan, the actual Void Dragon, or Magladroth, I think was his name or something. Yeah. And so they latch onto that. And I don't, like, while I don't think that's wrong, I hesitate to like say like, yes, I'm confident that that's a Void Dragon. I think I would be more satisfied if I was never fully explained. And if these Necron like constantly try to assault it and open it, and then, you know, we just never find out whether it is or isn't.
That's one of the beauties of 40K is that there's so many things that we get to fill in our own information for. And that keeps us, you know, we have just, I think there was a name for, I can't remember the name for the literary device of that. But we very much have it. Whatever it is, we have it.
Yeah. It's out there. It's ours.
It exists.
Yeah.
We did some episodes on like Minor Xenos, and we were talking about all the different Minor Xenos that Games Workshop has come up with. And there is some crazy ones. Do you remember the Death Watch one where they fought the Death Watch? And it was like,
was it a star?
Yeah, it's like literally some other type of star creature that had like these crazy powers. And like, I just like to think that, not everything has to be a Satan if it's all powerful. Like, could be something like that. Or
There's the universe and galaxy in 40K is so vast that I don't feel the need to make sure every dot is connected to another dot somewhere else in the galaxy. Yeah. I'm more than happy to have completely unexplained zones of space.
Sure.
There's a really cool story, and someone's describing a map, and they say, oh, this is the forest. And the other person looks at them and says, like, that, it's like the forest borders have been drawn, but nobody knows, like, the intricacies of what's actually in there. And I like to think of 40K like that, is we've drawn borders around stars and all our segmentums and all our sectors, but truly, like, what an unexplored galaxy it really is.
Yeah.
It's totally a Necron in there.
Is that how you truly think it's like a Void Dragon?
No, I'm kidding. I completely share your perspective of it's almost cooler not to know. And for, we got that in the Horus Heresy novel where they, you know, they were talking about the original manuscript and the almost like symbolism of the Emperor defeating a dragon on Mars, but it still doesn't give us an idea of the history. It almost like gives us more questions.
Yeah, which is an awesome way to write stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. For that point, I mean, we were there to learn about the Heresy. We weren't there to learn about Mars in general. You know, what was going on in that period for that story, but it gave us enough of a taste to, I don't know what, have 5-10 podcasts about just that one or two lines.
Yeah, for sure. Honestly.
Yeah, I love it. Well, hey, y'all, thank y'all very much for joining me. Where can people find you if they want to hear more of this type of stuff?
Well, we're on all major podcast platforms. We're
going to go through all 57 now for you.
We're in the process of updating a YouTube channel. For us, we've got some big ideas and stuff coming out there, but you can also find us on, you know, Facebook, Instagram. We have a really nice Discord community that you can find an invite to just on our Facebook. So
yeah, and we also got a Patreon page where for $2 a month, you get access to bonus videos and stuff, bonus content where we're pumping out more stuff. So
yeah,
we're always doing stuff.
Heck yeah, man. Well, hopefully I can
just
have you
Google Lorehammer and you'll find us.
Yeah, hopefully I get y'all again in the future, especially, you know, as we get to learn more about this stuff. And as the story's changed, I mean, the story is advancing. We already know that we're going to probably go through another, like, time leap of some kind and have things have happened before we start rolling dice in this new edition.
For sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us on. It was nice to talk to you, Paul. I've listened to your show for a long time, so it's nice to actually get to know you on a more personal level.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. See y'all soon.
Yeah, bye.
See you, Paul.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/ForgeTheNarrative.
Hey everybody, we are back. Still got Adam and Red.
What up?
Hey.
So Necrons, Red, how excited are you about a billion new models?
Man, so like, there's, you know, everyone else has gotten something. Gilliman, Magnus, Mortarion, you know, I mean, new Gaz, new Abaddon, all kinds of stuff.
You got your one cryptic.
Yeah, man.
I gotta say.
He had a cloak. Watch out.
Yeah. The Armageddon series. Now, don't get me wrong. I was laughing. Someone was telling me. I mean, it was a good one, too, that this concept that after a little while, and don't get me wrong, there's definitely some new Tomb Worlds of folks that are going to be joining the Necron ranks. But, you know, with the Armageddon box, the starter set they had with the new Cryptek, I mean, I felt like after a little while, people were going just for the ad mech and were essentially giving away the Necrons. I'm not saying that's going to be the case here.
Man, I had two of those. I have two of those halved boxes of the Necron. I have two Necron halves, and I picked them up for less than I saw people selling a single Mechanicum half, both sides. So you were exactly right, my man.
Yeah. So, but I don't think we're going to see that necessarily in this case, especially with the new stuff, but it is about time. And I tell you what, like, for all the awesome stuff that everybody's going to jump on with the Space Marines, there is so much stuff in the Necron stuff that it is amazing at just the development. I mean, new monolith. And like we've said before, I mean, the last monolith, you know, came out 15 years ago. The development of some of these models is just off the wall. The Silent King, right? So like, to put the Silent King on the table, like, you don't need to spoon feed or drip feed me rules on the Silent King. I'm going to get that model. Like, there's no, like, you know, question about that.
Well, I think long-time listeners might remember me complaining about Astrobal Vect no longer having a model. The Silent King has been the, like, keynote figure of the Necron lore. Barring maybe Imhotep, He's been like the keynote guy in the Necron lore, and he hasn't never had a model, never even been rumored that he was going to get a model. I didn't know this was coming. Did anybody know we were going to get a Silent King model?
No.
I noticed no fluff, like little fluff tidbits. I noted nothing. It's just like, oh, there you go. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, and so with that, and of course, you know, right next to him in that preview photo that GW showed us with more detail, you know, there's a new Satan. There's all kinds of stuff. You know, if you look real hard, you might be able to see what looks like maybe a new Flayed One model. But, you know, going to the box set they previewed, I mean, a new Kryptek with little Kryptek cronies, the new melee version of the Destroyers, and the new War of the Worlds, a variant of the War of the Worlds Walker. Like, all of those things are just, it's should be super exciting. You know, and they just did this Twitch live stream where they talked about some of the stuff and the changes to reanimation protocols. So all of 8th edition reanimation protocols, as cool as they could be, you could predict exactly how to beat them to certain extent. Yeah. So they kind of talked about that during the live stream, but like Feel No Pain was just that much better in regards of, or disgustingly resilient, just that much better in regards of survivability than reanimation protocols. So I'm super excited to see what they've tried to do in regards of addressing that.
Yeah, I think something absolutely needed to be done. I think my little spot fix was that I think you should have a chance to get one model back from a unit. Like when the last guy dies, yeah, at the end of the turn or the end of the phase, you got a chance for like D3 guys to stand back up, and then, you know, your opponent gets to kill him again and whatnot. But that would be representative. That would be representative of what I think it would feel like to fight these dudes.
Yeah, and I really like the way they painted it. I mean, trust, you know, the way they laid it out in regards to this really grueling fight, you know, that they get broken, they get back up again, they get broken, they get back up again. I mean, I definitely felt that while I was playing Necrons in 8th edition. I definitely could, you know, you could whittle me down as long as you didn't kill every single model. And that took some very, very deliberate posturing on my part. You know, okay, this, when these units die, some of these guys are going to be suddenly out of contact or behind a wall or something like that, that allows me to regenerate. There's all kinds of ways to go about that with the Necrons. And I, you know, it's going to be very fun to figure that out with this new mechanic of reanimation protocols.
The models, I mean, we know they're amazing, right? But the reason I like them so much is that the weapons and stuff, they don't look weedy. They look real thick and vicious. Like the weapons look like they're capable of dishing out a ton of pain. Like the everything, like the shape of the barrels, they look, it's very aggressive, very, like, you know, they mentioned on the live cast that the Necron civilization has seen empires, seen galaxy-spanning empires fall and been the cause of that. And I'm looking at them and I get it. Like, I feel that with these new models.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, you look at that, whether it's the new Immortal Overlord model or the new Skorpek Lord or the new Destroyer model they highlighted, like, these guys all look beefier, bulkier. I mean, it's like the Necrons saw the, you know, they've been doing, you know, they've been, I mean, by the lore, they've even been expanding and coming back and everything. And then whether it's the Silent King or it's like looking at Primaris or whatever, it looks like the Necrons were just, okay, well, I guess we'll bring in our beefy boys. We'll bring in our Primaris. And lo and behold, I mean, that new Destroyer model, you know, the bottom part is definitely larger. It's not as, like you said, well, reedy, exhaust, almost fluted. I mean,
yeah, they're,
yeah, the, it's massive. It's,
yeah, the, I hope that murder kegs are good.
They look like, you know, whether they soak up wounds or something like that, they kind of look like junkyard robots, right, to a certain extent. But I'll take that, anything that can help out a Kryptek, because if the Necrons hold to that vein in regards of protecting their heroes, they can definitely use more assistance. So I'll take it.
Yeah, they look neat. And yeah, I like it how we've all embraced their murder buckets or their murder kegs.
I like murder kegs, yeah.
Oh, I had to look up the fact that they were crypto thralls.
Yeah.
40K meme culture has come a long way.
Yeah, oh yeah. So I'm particularly, though, excited about the Plasmancer. Like, I feel like this is going to have some type of effect in the psychic phase.
Ooh. Something, right? I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing something like more the Satan powers get kind of a buff or something like that. We did used to see prior to 8th edition, there were variants of Cryptex that had much more flexibility or availability of options in regards to what they could do as Cryptex. It wasn't so currently in 8th edition, they have two options. They either increase reanimation protocols, or they give a they always increase reanimation protocols, but it's essentially the Envolm. You have to buy the Envolm.
Yeah, the right? Chromatron or the Kinetic Cloak. Yeah,
Yeah, cloak. Exactly. Yeah, the 5-up Envolm or the ability to move further, and so yeah, that 5-up Envolm is kind of a big deal in a lot of ways. But if they're adding more options that, and you know, so from their release they talked about making everybody's weapons better, I'm very interested to see what that said.
Well, there's another one. So this one looks kind of like, you know, magey almost. You might be thinking about the Plasma Sight,
maybe. Yeah,
which is the one that I think that the Plasma Sight ability to infuse destroyers with tainted energy makes an already dangerous unit deadlier still, and so, and it's weirdly cute, which I kind of agree.
I just want Pariahs back.
Or
something of that ilk. Like, because that's they've been one of my heartthrob love the lore part of these. Like, they were created to help win the war in the stars against the psychic might of the old gods and the old ones and stuff. And I just love the idea of them. I think they'd have no better place than what we currently see in the 8th edition rule set.
Yeah, well, and I think the Lich Guard kind of took over for the Pariahs, right? Like, Lich Guard didn't exist until their models came in and kind of replaced what used to be the Pariahs. And unfortunately, we lost Pariah data sheet equivalent. I mean, there weren't, you know, there never were Pariah data sheets before. There was just in previous codexes. And so maybe Pariah, the book, Psychic Awakening, you know, we haven't really seen too much come out of that, except for the fact that that crafting Cryptek is in it, Cesarek, I think his name is, but we haven't seen anything else. And so maybe we get lucky and there's some kind of Pariah, you know, like you can kind of like with, as far as I know, like World Eaters make a unit of Terminators into the Red Butchers. Maybe there's a strategy.
Lich Guard.
Some Lich Guard into Pariahs. That'd be cool. Again, wish listing, but you know, so soon.
That's a fine dream.
I'm just saying that this Plasmancer, he looks very mage-ish. You know, I mean, granted, all the Necron heroes have kind of robes and staves and stuff, but
this guy particularly
like he could be a man. Like, if you put a Lumineth Realm Lord head on this guy, he's going to fit right in. You know?
Yeah, no, he does look good. And I like how he's not. So, I mean, I've got every Cryptek model you can think of. I've got every Lord and Overlord and whatnot. And looking at him, he has definitely got a little bit different of an aesthetic, very spindly, taller, just a different approach to the Cryptek. I'm a fan.
Yeah. So let's look at this Necron Overlord. That base looks a lot bigger than the current bases.
Yes. For the Immortal Overlord?
The Overlord, the new Necron Overlord. He looks
with
like he's
with
on
the Tachyon Era
50 mil base or whatever. I know hard to tell from these pictures, but the reason I'm thinking is that you think of it, all this is going to have auras. You would assume they'll continue to keep their auras, and just having a character on a bigger base. I mean, those are already get included in list and are powerful. But we're talking about, and this is kind of interesting because the GW Prime, you know, when they've been talking about the board size, they've been very clear that, like, look, we set a minimum for a reason. Play whatever size you want. We know that. We're probably all going to agree on what the common size is and do that.
I think it's in a lot of ways, it's almost already decided. Simply because by some of the bigger event holders, some of the bigger stakeholders already coming out saying it's going to be adopted as XYZ.
But real clear, you play how everybody play how they want your models. You know, we get it. With any type of compression at all, and then an increase in base size, it makes those models more valuable. So if you didn't, if they were off your radar before, and then the physics of the game changes, they could quickly get back on your radar. Mm-hmm. Just something to think about. It looks like on a big boy size base is what he looks like to me.
As soon as I saw this guy, I was like, oh wow, he looks like he's such a change aesthetically from the Overlord they brought out. It was only about 3 or 4 years ago they brought out a new Overlord model. And I was thinking, like, what would make sense here? And I thought about Iron Man 2, or is it Iron Man 3? when Tony Stark, he's literally got like 30 variants of his suit made up now. He's obsessed with them. Surely these guys have got like their Sunday best, like Necron body. And they've got like their, I'm fighting against orcs today body. Download my consciousness into the thick suit, my man, my butler, Alfred. Like it would just make sense to me that like this haughty kind of almost arrogantly powerful near immortal being would just be questioning which body he'd like to wear today, and he'd have like different things for different occasions. I don't know. It just when I was looking at him, like, it's probably like the same guy. Every overlord that ever made is just the same dude, just wearing a different outfit based on like the battlefield.
I'm trying to get all like super detective on the base size in the picture, trying to compare what we know to be an assault intercessor, probably, you know, in a 32, and then the shield dudes. The Blade Guard veterans are on a larger base, so those have to be 40. The 40 looks about the same size as the captain who's standing next to the Necron Overlord, so he must be on a 40 mil base.
That makes sense.
Isn't he currently on a 40, or is he on a 32?
He's at least I've been tracking him on a 32.
Okay.
I know everybody's got their interpretation here at the end of 8, but...
Yeah.
Well, whatever, so, it comes with. The Cryptek, though, he's on a big base because he's got that swoopy cloak or whatever. He kind of sticks out as being the outlier. If you're using that Cryptek or another Cryptek, it's going to be on a different size base. But
right, yeah, the one with the cloak. Well, so it looks like the Plasmancer, I agree, is also on a bigger base. But the one that came out in the Armageddon box was on a bigger base, and then of course the smaller ones were smaller. So it's just interesting variation in that regard.
My detective work here is revealing that the Plasmancer looks like he's on a 32 mil base.
Oh my.
But the new, I don't know, what are they, stocky immortals? The ones with the, I don't have to guess the name, I am looking at it. Skorpek Lord guys. Sorry, the Skorpek Destroyers.
Yeah.
Seem to be on 50 mils.
Yeah, and that's not too much of a surprise, given Destroyers were on the... You know, it's funny because the Tomb Blades are on the smaller invisible, the flying bases, the smaller ones, whereas Destroyers, which are single model infantry units, use the same clear base that like an Eldar Falcon does.
Huh. Interesting.
Which I think that's like a 50 millimeter base there.
Yeah, I mean, again... Not getting too slicey-dicey with the details here, but I think all this stuff, when you're dealing with character models that will have auras, I think it matters, and, whatever. They look cool, so go for it. Every Necron player should be over the moon right now.
Man, and, so between that and, they talked about, the new War of the World Walker, not the one with the cannon, not the Doomsday variant, but the other one.
The Canoptic Reanimator.
Yeah, the Reanimator. So I really liked what they said during the live stream about it's got the ability to reconstruct warriors, but its ability to deconstruct stuff also applies to whatever else is around it. So I'm assuming it's going to have maybe some kind of flamer or something, flame type weapon.
Everyone else gets a -1 to their reanimation protocols.
Yeah.
They don't have reanimation protocols.
If I'm going to go out on a limb, I'd say that's like a mortal wound aura.
Or sure. What about a neg AP?
That would be, wow, yeah, for Necron Warriors being the 4+ save, if they could get like a neg AP, that would be incredible.
Yes, it would really help them. I mean, those things, so we were looking at it. They say that, so they said in the article it goes from 11 points to 12 points, which is awesome. Because when you consider like for our Chaos friends that have cultists that go from 4 points to 6 points, or intercessors for Space Marines going from 17 to 20, 11 to 12 doesn't seem that bad. However, there was an article that talked about reanimation protocols going to this new aesthetic with the warriors, not looking so, they're not pristine and clean. They kind of look beat up, right? They almost look like zombie warriors. There was an article that had a very vague sentence saying that they weren't reanimating as well. And so I don't know if that's actually going to translate to gameplay where warriors don't have as good of a reanimation protocol as some of the more fine-tuned, more elite units. So it's going to be very interesting to see if that plays out.
Well, yeah, because there's a big one of the main plot points for Necrons is the difference in quality of like the living metal for the masses and the living metal for the aristocracy. It's almost like there's a different gradient of metal. This is prime living metal right here.
Maybe that's why the murder kegs are in such a rough shape, because they are. Their models are, I mean, they look beat up, which is cool. It's, I like how that battle damage is built into some of this stuff.
Yeah, well, and you know, with the Silent King coming in and everything, there's definitely, kind of like what you said, Adam, this grade, this difference in grade between them. And we kind of saw that in the lore too, you know, especially in the 8th edition lore, where they made it very clear that, you know, that whatever the soul material was that was transferred from the original Necron tier to the Necrons as they are now, the warriors, by and large, are essentially, they've lost whatever they were that made them individually, you know, whatever. And they're just drones. And then as you go further up the chain, people are more and more unique and themselves and individual, still suffering issues, you know, just like Xandrek having his essentially reoccurring past life or what have you. And so, you know, it's very interesting. I'm super excited to see how it plays out and how this kind of new almost undead robot aesthetic plays out for them, because I do think it's going to be really fun. Not that it wasn't before, it's just they've definitely stepped it up.
I'm just looking, the variant seems cool. I mean, this is the first time I've ever been really excited about Necrons. I mean, not that, you know, the robots have always looked cool, right? But I think one of the best things they've ever done for Necrons is when they started giving them personalities. And I understand that was a, you know, a big leap forward from what they were, or, you know, originally the armless walking Terminators. You know, it was basically like a snapshot out of Terminator, whatever the second movie was, when they went forward and the soulless robots going forward and gunning down humanity. That was very terrifying.
And yeah, that was the Necrons in 3rd edition, right? Like that's what they were. It was just a stamped deal of that over and over and over again. You had the same little mini metal models, which I have several of, and I think there's two variations of them, maybe a little more.
One with the gun at a 45, one at a 90.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, I mean, you know, I saw the models that you painted for Sean, right? And I mean, of course, I've got my own and everything. Those are the, you know, the 5th edition Necrons, and they look good. They don't look bad. In fact, you know, you can see some very good, clean paint jobs that folks have done across the board, where they're almost like clinically clean, right? Like they're marble, or they're very straight edge. But then you look at some of these models, they've got like holes, they've got stuff hanging out. They look grunt. And I know part of that's the paint job with this more bronzeous looking paint job, but they look dirty, right? I mean,
they look like they've survived millennia of battle. Like these are the same people that fought the Star Gods.
Right. Yeah.
I'm digging it, man. I am digging it.
I'm digging it as well.
Yeah, so anyway, I think it pumped. I think you get your own Primaris Lieutenant in the form of this Royal Warden.
Totally do. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. Good time to be a Necron player. Well, guys, I know we're just talking about the models and gushing over them, but man, who isn't? Who among us is not gushing over these new models? They're amazing.
Super dark clouds on the horizon. We still haven't even touched on that Satan model, but I think we should wait for more reveals on that.
I want to know which Satan it's modeled after, because like we've got the Transcendent Contan technically didn't have a personality to it like the Nightbringer or the Deceiver, but I would love if they keep that going. Like we've still got, there's still like a, there's apparently there was like dozens of different Catan, like with their own personalities and idiosyncrasies and things to their personalities and stuff. Like the Deceiver, he wasn't the most trustworthy of gentlemen.
What?
You know, I think there's a lot of depth there that could be explored.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and with the Psychic Awakening stuff, I mean, that is still pumping out. We know we got stuff coming on the way. I mean, I got to get some lowdown on what people are doing with Fabius Bile.
Yeah, Boy's back.
Pretty neat. I mean, it's plenty of stuff to do, plenty of stuff to talk about. I know that we're focused mostly on 9th, and since we can't get out there and play as frequently as maybe we were before, you know, it's really nice to have this 9th to look forward to.
Absolutely. Well, guys, it's keeping us all going. Like, it's almost perfect. Like, everyone's kind of having to have downtime, and I hope G-Dub's realizing that, like, 9th is keeping a lot of people mojoed for the game when we do get a chance to play it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, we're getting these daily drips, you know, whatever. I can't wait to get these models in hand. And well, I mean, we know how I'm painting them, but I want to see how it all plays out. All right. Well, guys, thanks for joining us tonight. We will be back next week.
Take care, folks.
Thanks, everybody.
Ed, make my day.